The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to the program. Our guest is Irfan Yunus, head of European research at Savills Investment Management, where he and his team are responsible for creating, forecasting, managing, and disseminating research outlooks. So along those lines, Savills recently issued a report that says technology, urbanization, and globalization will determine winners in the logistics sector of the economy, which is what we'll discuss today. Now, in a press release announcing the distribution of that report, Irfan Yunus was quoted as saying there are challenges facing the logistics sector, such as rising populism, protectionism, and Brexit, but new trade routes, economic development initiatives, and the growth of e-commerce all mean that the European logistics sector offers an attractive risk-return profile for investors who partner with asset managers and who have the right expertise and local knowledge to identify the winning assets. End of quote. Beginning of discussion. Irfan Yunus, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. And before we just assume, I think everybody has a kind of an intuitive understanding of what logistics are. Just the definition, though, of logistics, I mean, technically it talks about a dictionary definition, talks about the planning, implementation, and coordination of the details of a business. There's also the, I think it probably originated with the other definition, which says a branch of military science and operations dealing with the procurement, supply, and maintenance of equipment and the movement, evacuation, hospitalization of personnel, and so on. Do you have, what is your definition of logistics, in terms of how would you capsulize it, Irfan?
Sure. I mean, the word logistic itself has evolved with a number of years, but the very traditional, I mean, if I go back to the basics of the real estate, there are three main segments, first being office, second being retail, and third historically being industrial. But as the term evolves across Europe and logistics starts to become a bit more of in fashion, and then that started to replace the industrial. So now we talk about two type of in sort of an industrial unit. One is like a light industrial unit where you have a bit of a manufacturing element, and then you have logistics where you have distribution hubs, urban logistics, and then the likes of mega distribution centers. So logistics itself has now gaining much more of a popularity. So in terms of definition, it's a modern name for the industrial units which we see at the moment.
And those of us who have been paying attention to it have seen it evolve in a big, big way. It's so much more sophisticated than it used to be, and the integration of all the processes, it's pretty amazing. And your report talks about the fact that technology, urbanization, globalization are all factors that are going to continue to drive future returns in that sector of the economy in Europe specifically, which is your region of study. And this is according to the new report. Flesh out each of those a little bit for our listeners, those three big areas, technology, urbanization, globalization. How are they landing in the logistics sector? Or how are they expressing
themselves? Sure, I mean, these all three factors are making a big impact onto the logistics market. But let me go through one by one. I mean, starting with technology, logistics providers are optimizing their services to meet increasingly technology-driven retail consumption. We've seen online retail sales are rising. Retailers themselves are evolving the model and how they can combine the click and collect and the last mile delivery, how they can provide the most efficient solution in terms of from consumers ordering the goods and getting delivered within like an hour delivery slot. So we are seeing the startups competing with each other in improving those digitalized aspects of logical supply chain. So booming e-commerce offers excellent opportunities for growth in modern logistics real estate, such as mega distribution centers, which are large distribution centers outside the cities, and these are then become feeder into the urban logistics or smaller logistics facilities within the city limits, where you can fulfill within the greater efficiency and within a short span of time. But at the same time, what we have seen that urbanization is contributing towards it. So rising urbanization trend, which we sometimes associate with emerging market, but it's so much true into Europe as well. And we are seeing that the higher density of population, and driven by these technological changes, are impacting on how logistics assets are behaving. I mean, what we are seeing that city dwellers are more tech-savvy. And because they are tech-savvy, we can see that they are using much more of the online retailers, which is allowing them to create more demand for those space, and that is creating that demand for the logistics space itself. I mean, such trends, in our view, makes urban logistics a winning sector into European investment market, particularly where internet sales as a proportion of total retail sales are rising. This is surely the case for the UK, Germany, France, Sweden, and the Netherlands. But the other countries like Spain, Italy, and Poland are catching up with thresholds are just crossing at 5-6% of the total retail sales. The third component which you touched on was on the globalization. And I mean, this is the key ingredient for the growth of logistics before the likes of technology, which is taking shape. But what we're seeing, the globalization, the global trade, and have supported European logistics sector growth over the last few decades. According to the Deutsche Bank research, global trade has outperformed the global economy over the long term, and trade within the European still takes a lion's share of it. The worldwide commerce has happens through this the trade and the export business, which Europe has surplus in at the moment. We think, however, there are some increasing geopolitical tensions. What if mean that there are tariffs been put in place? Could that impact on the global trade? But looking at the certain new developments, so the likes of New Silk Road by our initiative from China, and see how that can expand into Europe and how it can open up new corridors coming into Europe.
Well, you know, you do talk in the report about the current logistics corridors in Europe and the expansion of the new one being established by China. You just mentioned the so-called New Silk Road that's being established to help fulfill China's One Belt, One Road objective. Tell us about the One Belt, One Road strategy and how it fits into the report's conclusions.
Sure. I mean, it helps us understand how the future corridors will evolve. So just to touch on what the New Silk Road is, it's One Belt, One Road initiative. It's an emerging network of railways, highways, pipelines, special economic zones, commercial centers, and logistics hubs spanning from central China to Western Europe. According to Royal Institute of Chartered Surveys, the area connected by the New Silk Road includes about 70% of the world's population, 75% of the world energy resources, and 70% of the global GDP. And what it is doing, it's complementing existing primary corridors. So if I go back and look at the traditional corridors, or if you look at the map, it's in shape of a banana, how it has evolved. So it stretches all the way from north of London, going through Belgium, the Netherlands, Western Germany, Switzerland, and ending in Milan. And this corridor is home for more than 110 million people and includes the most economic areas in Europe. Then we have seen the evolution of the Golden Banana, which connects Milan all the way down south towards the Spain and in the Mediterranean coast. But with what's happening with the emergence of this New Silk Road, at the same time with the open border policy within European Union and the cost efficiencies, where we are seeing there's a lower wage cost in the eastern part of Europe, as well as cheaper land, much more flexible labor laws, have allowed that the evolution of a new corridor, which is expanding towards further east, and that will connect with the new One Belt, One Road initiative, hence creating a new corridor called Purple Banana in our view.
That new corridor is called what?
We have a sort of drawing from what we, the traditional belt, the corridor has been called Blue Banana. So we have, from at Sabal Siam, we have labeled it as a Purple Banana.
Purple Banana, okay. Where's the, what's the origin of the name?
It's, as I said, I think the original name is being considered from the very traditional corridor. So if it's drawing the traditional corridor from north of London down to Milan, and the shape of the whole corridor is in the shape of a banana. So this is how it became popular. And then we saw emergence of the golden banana because of being tropical weather in Spain. And then we are seeing that the evolution of a new corridor spanning out to towards east in the shape of banana as well, which is western, sort of a purple banana.
Got it. Okay, interesting. And I want to ask you more about that. But first, I want to get talk a little bit more about the One Belt, One Road initiative. There are corridors of trade existing now. Is part of what China's strategy is that they're, I mean, what we see them doing is building a lot of infrastructure, a lot of needed infrastructure in places, but along with the infrastructure and that investment comes strings attached, such as we want to do a certain level of business with your country or with your region or what have you. Is it truly a trade corridor first, or is it really a way for China to build infrastructure that establishes its dominance in certain key strategic areas?
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, I've seen, for example, if I look at the European partner or European city which partners with this initiative is Hamburg, and Hamburg has benefited a lot more, being their port, being most one of the most busiest port, benefiting from this initiative, and they are in terms of unit of containers which are coming in, they are probably at the moment in unit terms they're highest amongst Europe at the moment. So it's a mutual benefit. So you open up your trade corridors, you allowed much easier access for transportation of goods, and then you're benefiting from a that the consumer is able to access goods at a cheaper rate. Same time, you are benefiting from cross-selling your own goods as a high value add buying in China. So that works in both ways.
Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly not making any value judgments. It's God knows we need more infrastructure around the world, and clearly the United States did the same thing during its big development phase. So no value judgment being made there. But let's then talk about the European corridor that's materializing. Is it solely something that Central and Eastern Europe is going to benefit from, or is if that's the case, is that where investors should be looking for opportunities, or that should they be concentrating their capital in some other
places? Yes, I mean, yeah. I mean, I think we have been very active in those regions, and more purely the reason which you just highlighted, that what has happened since the adding of new countries into the European Union and opening up the borders between them, that's allowing us to see tap into the countries which offer these cost efficiencies. And what has happened that with good network access of road, then a lot of operators are now setting up their hubs, either it's a manufacturing hubs or the distribution hubs, just east of German border. And they are servicing the German market as well as French market. And there are times that we even get goods coming in all the way from Poland to UK as well. And the purely the reason between them is they find the land is much cheaper, but at the same time, their labor cost is cheaper, and they benefit from relaxed sort of labor laws as well.
Now, getting back to the trio of forces, technology, urbanization, globalization, that are posing a optimistic future for the logistics sector there in Europe. Globalization is the area that you said, you know, there's some pressure on that right now. There's populism that's been rising, that the threat of protectionism. Given the power of China and its obvious desire to trade globally, is that something that do you consider that power something that could override or dampen down these protectionist tendencies among a lot of nations? Because clearly people want to do business with China. If you're going to grow an economy, doing business with China could be a very positive thing. Does China have an outsized influence in terms of tamping down protectionism?
Sorry, just to understand your question, do you think that China would try to increase protectionism, or would become...
Opposite. Just the opposite. In other words, China sees, you know, the globe as, rightfully so, it sees an opportunity to sell tremendous amounts of goods and services around the world. And when countries try to put up barriers, what they're effectively doing is maybe shutting off the Chinese market to themselves, because there is retaliation when tariffs are placed on goods and services. So my question is really along the lines of, does the power of China actually make it very difficult for countries with protectionist tendencies, which the United States has been drifting in that direction as an example, does it really kind of upend that tendency? Because it's like, look, you want to do business with China, you want to grow your economy, we're going to have access if you want access.
It varies from country to country. I mean, we have certainly seen the case in South Asia, for example, where China is building up a whole CPAC relationship with country Pakistan, and you can see that they are also growing influence in south towards the likes of Myanmar and Bangladesh. So in the countries where it have created its influence to open up a bit more, it has done it. But if I look at Europe, where these countries in Europe are already well established in terms of the goods they have very unique product in offering. They do benefit from importing China, but at the same time, China is also a big market for them. So the relationship is far more mutual in that respect. That they are trying to see if, for example, you're able to access a billion per person consumer market, surely there's an advantage for them. And I don't think there are tendencies in Europe in terms of having any types of protection. They're more interested in having an open market, provided that you meet certain quality criteria in terms of what the European Commission requires.
So of the three areas, technology, urbanization, and globalization, I'm not even sure if this is a fair question, but is there one of those categories that you consider to be the most important, or are they just so closely interlinked that separating or ranking them is not even possible?
Yeah, no, I'll go with the later one. It is very difficult to isolate one of them individually, given that how intermingled these individual forces are. But if I look now over the last 10 years, if I have to pick one of the theme, urbanization theme has been with us for nearly it's probably a century now. So I think this is something started to evolve after the World War One, and then it started to gain much pace after the World War Two, and globalization, again, very similar age profile in terms of how the trend has been. But technology, it's fairly something which has evolved dramatically over the last, say, 10 to 15 years time period, and that is shaping up how the behaviors are changing, how the future generation, for the millennials, how they are behaving in terms of consumption, how they're becoming, their attitude toward quick satisfaction and quick access to information is driving things. They prefer to be living much close to each other in terms of either it's a co-living, co-working spaces, and this is shaping up the future cities, and also shaping up how some some of the product retail layouts are changing, and this is how then it's influencing how logistics it can be seen as. So, I mean, for example, if you order something now, there's a sort of desire to have that product immediately available, and this is what retailers are trying to fulfill it. And because they're driven by these changes, they are creating more demand for logistics space into sort of cities which are well connected within their own network of either goods logistics hubs or how efficiently anything in terms of items can flow between sort of a network of cities.
So I've been bouncing you around a bit with these questions, Irfan, but let's take a step back and get down to maybe the brass tacks question, which is the investor who reads this Seville's Investment Management report, what do you think is the major takeaway or takeaways for the institutional investor who reads that report?
Sure. I mean, the first one is that if you are looking at real estate investment, principles are very basic. I mean, you see, how is the demand for the real estate itself? And if the demand is there and you have more supply than the demand is, then you see some sort of a rental decline and then it's less attractive. But if demand continues to be driven by structural changes, supply, it's catching up, but it's not there yet, it's resulting in positive rental growth. Then the other factor is how much you're paying for that positive rental growth. And looking at the European logistics property and its historic risk-return profile compared to the other property segments like offices and high street, the yield gap between property logistic assets versus prime office and prime retail, it's much higher. Furthermore, we've looked at historic standard deviations. The logistics segment is less volatile. So in terms of pure return point of view, where you're getting a high yield plus much better rental growth, it's more attractive than your offices and retail.
Our guest has been Irfan Yunus. He is head of European research at Seville's Investment Management. We've been talking about this new report on logistics and the three big factors that are driving logistics right now in Europe: technology, urbanization, and globalization. Irfan, thank you for taking the time.
Sure. No, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much.